Well, James, I really enjoyed our interview with Vijay today. Of course, he's one of our favorite listeners, so of course I'm going to enjoy our interview.
Yeah. Of course, talking about Gateway, but it also talking about NMI Payments and kind of right. This embedded payment thing that they've now added to their list of tools. And then for the questions in the field today, very different. I partnered with a good friend of mine, Rich Norton, who I talk about as really, in my opinion, the best credit card processing salesperson in America right now. And we talk about what to do when you're brand new to the industry. And so that was that segment. And then Patty brought up something I actually wasn't aware of. So talk about that a little bit.
There's some potential roadblocks to this acquisition of Discover by Cap One. And as James and I discussed, you know, these kind of roadblocks are common, but it's interesting listening to some of the arguments that are being made.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, neither Vijay or NMI is currently a sponsor, advertiser, or anything like that. Just interviewing an industry professional and just a great episode today. So let's dive into this interview, Patty.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Merchant Sales Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Patty and I are here today with our good friend Vijay, who's the CEO over at NMI. How are you doing today, Vijay?
Doing great now that I'm on your podcast.
Always a pleasure to have you, sir. So we're going to be diving into embedded payments, of course, talking about NMI payments and the future that you see for this kind of ISV ISO world. But before we get into all of that stuff, we'd love to get a little update. It's been a little while since you were on the podcast. So how's everything going? What's the direction of NMI been like? What have you been up to?
Well, we've been really busy. And, you know, we love this business so much because we are in an ecosystem that is thriving. And what we love about this market is this pie is growing. So there's enough space with each pizza slice, so to speak, getting bigger and bigger for lots and lots of competitors and lots of service providers to help out all the folks that listen to your podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's start by discussing embedded finance. You know, what exactly is embedded finance, Vijay? I admit in preparation for this interview, I did a little bit of reading up on it myself, but it's not that easy to kind of wrap your head around for the average person to wrap their head around. So, you know, if you could tell us what exactly it is, what's driving it, and how does the payment processing piece fit in?
Sure. Well, we could talk about this for a long time because it's my favorite topic. You talked about embedded finance, and within embedded finance, NMI lives and thrives in the subsection of embedded payments. And so it's not just hard for you, Patty. I'm the CEO of NMI, and I can't explain to my parents because they go, oh, you're like Toast. You're like Square. When I swipe my credit card, is that you? And I go, kind of, but not really. And I think the way that I can explain that is we power the people that accept payments. So sometimes I talk about us being a B2B to B2C company. I'm not stuttering. We're a business that sells to an ISO or an ISV platform or an integrator, and they package a solution, for example, retail or dental doctor's offices or field service, that then sells that to the merchant who goes after those doctors or those retail merchants. That's three Bs, NMI, the NMI partner, the actual merchant, and then a consumer. And so really, if you think about it, it's just layers of middleware, and we happen to be the plumbing and the infrastructure that allow ISOs, integrators, and ISVs to sell amazing solutions that are tailored to certain sectors and certain segments of the economy.
Sure. So I love that. And it's so interesting you bring this up because you mentioned in there that, you know, it's like, well, when I swipe the card, is that you? And you're like, well, sort of, but not really. But now it seems like maybe it kind of could be because now we're moving into payments. So talk about this motivation. I mean, this is in my mind, it's a pretty big strategic move to say we're going to create NMI payments and go to market with that. So walk me through a little bit of that and kind of the rationale for and the motivation for creating your own payment processing solution.
Sure. So, you know, we have a tagline at NMI, and it's been the same aspiration we've had for the last 5 years. And I think we're going to spend the next 5 years building it out. And our tagline is from sign up to payout. Now, if you go back in history, NMI started as a payment gateway, a white label payment gateway. We then turned it into an omni-channel gateway by taking card not present e-commerce transactions, you know, API calls with payloads and adding the EMV device connectivity. And then we started to realize that it's not enough in this era to just provide a gateway, because a lot of people said, how do I get a merchant account? And we would say, go get a merchant account, type in your MID in the gateway, your merchant ID, and you're good to go. And many people said, what's a merchant account? What's a MID? That's really complicated. So we decided to say, we want to help you sign up for a merchant account, process the payment, and eventually move the money or deal with the payouts. And so we've been real busy on the sign-up layer. You might remember we bought a company called Agreement Express that does the onboarding and the KYC. Mm-hmm. They know your customer, the anti-money laundering, and Iris CRM that helps ISOs and ISVs target the merchants with a CRM. And so the sign-up layer was almost complete, except for one thing. And that was a lot of payments today are being originated at a software platform.
Right.
And, you know, maybe I'll just pause there and see if I can go further with any other questions there, because that really leads us to why we launched NMI Payments.
Right. Yeah, no, and it's I love what you said there, because it's true. I mean, there's, you know, it's hard when you kind of try to decouple things that are really complicated, because there's always certain people that are part of the chain who understand the whole chain.
Right.
And they understand that you have these two links in this big chain. But there are others who are like, just take care of it, right? Like, I don't want to mess with it at all. So, okay, so yeah, so let's talk about NMI Payments. So how long has it been in the works? And maybe you could give us some of the high-level features, capabilities. Like, let's talk about what it actually is and what it does.
Sure. So, you know, we are always here to serve our market. And we launch solutions to solve problems for our customers. Our customers happen to not be merchants. So I want to just make sure that everyone understands that we don't service merchants. We service partners, as I mentioned, ISOs, ISVs, and system integrators who go after the merchants. And what we found is that increasingly the ISVs, the independent software vendors, or the people that make solutions for, you know, pick a sector, yoga studio software, you know, medical spas, they started calling us up and going, you know, we're using a fully integrated 2.9% and 30 cents platform. It's the biggest one, I won't name it. It's really expensive once we get, you know, into tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of software payments flowing through our pipes. And then they said to us, can you give us a merchant account? Because we're really focused on yoga studios. We want to have the best yoga studio software experience in the world. And we said, well, no, we don't do that. And after hanging up the phone on many, many software companies, we thought, well, maybe we should do it. Mm-hmm. Maybe for those folks who don't know what a MID is, who don't know what a merchant account is, and frankly, don't really care too much, we could offer up our own merchant acquiring. Now, we stand at NMI for flexibility, modularity, and choice. That means you can always come to NMI with a merchant account that is processed by over 160 processors. We support all the First Data, Fiserv, FIS, Worldpay, Chase, you name it. But if you choose not to get the merchant account from someone and you want us to give it to you, we can give it to you. And that's what was the impetus behind launching this offering. And so far, we appear to be off of a great start. And the vast majority of our customers don't use NMI merchant acquiring. And we probably think in the long term, it will be a small segment for us because, again, we don't go after merchants. We just want to enable our partners with every tool in the toolkit. Mm.
Yeah. And so I love that because it leads so beautifully into the next question, which is the obvious one, because I know so much of your business is the ISO community, our audience. And, you know, our audience, they do payments. In fact, many of them are going after ISVs to try to get payments, you know, and integrated and things of that nature. So obviously this was a big consideration when you were rolling this out. So I guess my question is, you know, what would you say to kind of the skeptics that are more in our audience? Like, wait a second, NMI is competing with us. You know, what do you say to them? And how do you see this fitting in strategically with this kind of ISO segment as you move forward?
Yeah. So look, the market is moving very fast. And we are really the largest independent payment gateway out there. We would not go into a business that would harm or go after our own customer base. So as I mentioned, what we want to say is all of the ISOs that work with us, you know, now we have yet another tool in the toolkit. And I think inevitably, when you get to be a certain size, you know, we processed over $200 billion of payments last year. It comes with the territory that certain people are going to say, oh, you know, NMI is competing with us. But I really want to go on record here that we're not going after your merchants, and you can continue to use the gateway with your own merchant accounts. And by the way, if you want to get a quote from us, maybe we could be more competitive than the merchant acquiring bank that you're working with. And one of the things we learned with our ISO base is many of our ISOs, they're not super over the moon with many of the bank acquirers. Many banks have withdrawn from the BIN sponsorship or from the sponsorship program. Mm-hmm. And so we just want to give more choice. And I think what will happen is over time, people will start to see that we are actually helping them grow bigger. We're helping the market expand. And I think all boats will rise in these high tides.
Vijay, one thing that might be on the minds of our listeners is the question of whether clients are locked into a specific set of processors and shopping carts when committing to an embedded payments scheme. Can you speak to that for a few minutes?
Sure. So I would say that one of the core value propositions for NMI is that we have more processor connections, more EMV devices, and more shopping cart integrations than I think anyone has out there. So over 160 processor connections, which means that you can choose your processor and you will not get locked in. I sometimes joke that some of our competitors may put you into the Hotel California of payments. What I mean by that...
I do know what you mean by that, but James may need an education.
I mean, you know, some people said to me, Vijay, that's not relevant. Who, what? And I'm like, doesn't everybody know that song? But, you know, I know that song. You know, you can check in, but you can't check out. Particularly some of the larger players, you know, the big dinosaurs, or let's say, you know, the big 10,000 pound gorillas, you know, they have gateways, they are processors, they have merchant acquiring, and they will often say, hey, you don't need NMI, just come and direct code to our hard code to our processor connection and life will be good. And we like to say, wouldn't you want to be able to have the flexibility with a pull down menu to say, today I'm going to send my payments to processor X, tomorrow processor Y, maybe I can play them off against each other to get a better residual and more basis points. So I think that, you know, if you want to have flexibility, if you don't want to be beholden to one vendor, one supplier, come to NMI, code to our API, and you will have over 160 to choose from. You have over 200 shopping cart integrations, and you have over 60 EMV devices. So if you're going to grow your business and you're thinking of the future, I think flexibility, modularity, and choice are super important because you don't want to be in that Hotel California.
Just as an aside, guys, I actually was in San Francisco one time, and there was a Hotel California, and I had to check in.
Were you able to check out? I mean, apparently
obviously
you're here,
so. I was.
So Vijay, let's back up a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about the developer side of things. So one thing I was very impressed with was, you know, it's not easy. Like, you guys have made these acquisitions, and you know, these companies each have their own APIs, and it's like, that's great from a functionality perspective, but not always so great for a developer with the kind of complexity. You know, talk about that, because I think even our audience now, we get a lot more ISVs that listen to the podcast, but even the ISOs are starting to hire developers and they're building their own software. So talk about kind of your vision for NMI from a developer perspective and what you've done to create that developer portal for them.
Sure. We spent a lot of time thinking about this. And by the way, you know, in life, often we like to think of things in black and white buckets, like there's an ISO and they don't know anything about software, and there's an ISV, an independent software, and knows everything about software. And as we've talked about, and you've articulated on your podcast, I want to thank you for educating the industry. It's not really how it works. You know, 30 years ago, you had two guys and a dog, we used to joke, in a garage, and they sold Verifone or Ingenico terminals in a briefcase, and they didn't know what an API was. They actually thought an API and an IPA were maybe a different kind of beer. I don't know. Now you fast forward to today, and there is no ISO that isn't tech savvy. And there are a lot of ISVs that obviously want to consume the product. And we are committed at NMI to allow you to consume our services in three ways. You can have a no-code console where you can download your graphics, your art, your color scheme. We'll do the billing for you. You can outsource your entire business and not know anything about tech because it's fully no-code. Then you can go to our SDKs, our software development kits, and integrate our software and your software in an executable code, like on a Windows device or Linux or what have you. And the third one is you can call our APIs and just do it through web services. The third one is the one where we did a lot of work to launch a brand new payment gateway integration portal. And we have just put this out there about a month ago, and there were a few core things we wanted. We wanted to have hands-on learning with an API Explorer. You can go in, play with the code, get your API keys instantly, and start running fictitious transactions to make sure you know how things work. When you're ready to go, you go live. Instant feedback, interactive documentation, customizable examples, and essentially accelerated development. So we want to make it easy for... We have a lot of ISOs, by the way, that have 200-300 software developers on their staff. And we have, obviously, software developers that are looking for this. So we're super excited about the API Explorer, the new abstraction layer. And as you mentioned, we did a lot of acquisitions, but now we have an abstraction layer on top of that. So you don't really have to care what's under the hood. One API call and you get access to all of these services across our entire product suite.
And then I guess that would lead kind of naturally into this question about the white labeling as well. So we have the developer side, but for these larger organizations, help me understand, you know, like, what does white label mean for an NMI? Mm-hmm. And then even more specifically, as we talk about NMI payments, and you even kind of made the pitch a minute ago to maybe, hey, there's an ISO out there that maybe wants to do payment processing through NMI, especially if they're doing tech integrations and things of that nature. What does that look like? Can they white label NMI payments? So talk about the white label experience as a whole and specifically with the payment side now.
Sure. So again, white label is core to our DNA, which is why it makes it very difficult at cocktail parties and Thanksgiving dinners, because people say to me, Vijay, you say you're a CEO of a great payments company. I never heard of you. And I said, yeah, you won't hear me, because we do white label it. So that 2 billion transactions, the 400,000 merchants that rely on us come to us through about 3,500 partners. And so you won't see our name appear anywhere. And the white label is really important, because unlike some of our competitors, you know, they want to put their thing, you know, powered by so-and-so. So for the merchant underwriting, the new product, it is also white labelable, if that is a word. It's a little tough one. And you don't have to know it's NMI, other than for regulatory reasons. There are times when we have to put below who the sponsor bank for the ISO is. But essentially, our goal is that you can white label NMI merchant acquiring, offer it side by side with your own merchant acquiring if you have that. And as I mentioned, give us a shot. Maybe we can give you a better rate. You mentioned there were some skeptics out there, but you know what happened when we announced NMI payments about a month and a half ago? We got a ton of our ISOs saying, can you board these merchants? Can you give us a better buy rate? Can we do business with you? And so we got way more inbound inquiries than we did folks that were worried about us competing. I think over time they'll see that we're not here to compete. We're just here to make the market grow.
Yeah.
That's cool. I really like that. So it leads obviously to the next logical question, Vijay, where would we send people who want to learn more about NMI payments?
Well, of course, our website, NMI.com, is the best place to go. We have information about the three pillars of our platform today, which is what we call MRM, Merchant Relationship Management, all of the tooling to onboard and underwrite merchants with your own merchant acquiring, if you're still doing it that way, which most people will be. The second one is the gateways explained in full detail. And then the third one is NMI payments. The other ways you can reach out to me, you can just email me directly at vijay, NMI.com, and I will connect you to one of our sales reps. And then I do want to point out, you know, I personally and us at NMI, we are very much industry participants. We're one of many vendors. You don't have to do business with us. We will educate you. We will help you. And if you want to learn from us and then go to a competitor, you can do it. ETA is a great place to learn about the industry. Obviously, this podcast, both James and Patty, and I hope to see many of you at ETA Transact in next month in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Yep. Awesome. Always an exciting event for sure. So, well, Vijay, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today and to share your insights. It's always a pleasure having you on the podcast. And I know our listeners will get a lot of value as usual from the episode today. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much. With a lot of gratitude. And I would tell everyone on this podcast, please listen to the other episodes. I learn a lot. I listen to it every week.
Oh, thank you, Vijay.
Thank you very much.
This is Questions from the Field, brought to you by ccsalespro.com. the leader in merchant sales training and technology. And now, here is Questions from the Field with James Shepherd.
Patty, before we dive into the questions from the field, I want to kind of give a little bit of context for those that don't know. So I have a friend of mine named Rich Norton, and Rich Norton is, in my opinion, the best payment processing sales professional in America. And that's a pretty big distinction.
That's a big distinction coming from you. Yes.
Yeah. So to give you an example of this, now he wouldn't mind me sharing this, because we actually had a podcast episode. One of our most listened to ever was how to sell 300 merchants in 1 year. And he did.
I remember that.
Yeah. So again, Rich could correct me, but I believe I'm saying this correctly, that I think he's on year 20. For 20 years in a row, he has personally sold at least 300 merchant accounts.
Wow.
And I mean, that is an insane number when you think about that.
That's like one a day.
It's more than one a day when you think about number of work days, you know?
Right.
And then he had 1 year where he actually sold 600 MIDs personally himself in 1 year.
Personally himself.
So he's an amazing guy. Well, in addition to that, he has a team, and his team is very specialized. He works with people who come in that are brand new to the industry. They have no idea about the payments industry at all. But I worked with him to come up with a just very high level. So for those of you that are really experienced in the industry, this is going to be a little rah-rah for you. But for those that are brand new and don't understand any of it, that's
Pay
the
attention.
Idea. So I'm just going to do this little segment and replace this questions from the field as I kind of interview Rich and talk about what it means to be in the payment processing industry. So with all that being said, and again, this is a sponsored segment. I want to make that really clear because the idea is Rich wants, if you're brand new to the industry, he's looking to add you to his team and provide you with the training and structure that I talk about a lot on the podcast that you need when you start. So with that being said, here is that segment from Rich Norton. So I'm back here with my friend Rich Norton. We're talking about getting started in the payments industry. In our last video in this series, Rich provided us some information on just the very basics of getting started, setting goals, the importance of having a mentor and a coach. Today, Rich, I want to talk about compensation. And of course, we have to start that conversation with residual income. What is residual income and why is it so attractive to agents that come from other industries into the payment space?
Excellent. Yeah, when I came into the industry, and gosh, it's been 24 years, and I was coming back from an encyclopedia door-to-door sales guy, and you're only as good as your last sale.
Right.
And when I came into the industry, I was working with a different company than the one I'm with right now, and I didn't know anything about residual income for the first years. All I knew is that I was a credit card machine salesman, and that's what I did. So when it came, in fact, the leader that I had, when I inquired about that, said, you know, don't worry about that. There's no money in that at all. Well, we know that's not true. But residual income is why we do what we do. Somebody told me years ago, if you want to build wealth, if you want to get rich, get into a position where you're making money while you're sleeping. And that's what this business allows us to do. And again, the business is as big as you want it to be. And you'll find with me, you know me, I'm very transparent. I've got several hundred representatives around the country, and you can talk to any one of them, whether they've been here for a month, whether they've been here for a year, 10 years, 20 years. And we talk about goal setting, and we say, what is the number that you need to reach to cover your lifestyle when you're brand new? Whether that number is $5,000 a month, whether it's $10,000 a month, whatever that number is, we're going to work with you to get you to that point. And that's what we call taking the pressure off. Now, we have upfront money, we'll cover that.
Right.
But you want to get to the point where you can wake up in the morning and say, all right, my lifestyle is covered, the pressure is off. And of course, we don't stop there, we go to the next level. So residual income allows, I call it freedom. You know, it's amazing. It's incredible.
Yeah. And ultimately, it's hard, I think, for a lot of people to wrap their minds around the fact that, you know, every transaction, right, that when you go into a small business and you see somebody, you know, taking a credit card payment, there is a sales representative somewhere who just made money on that transaction.
That's right.
Small amount. There are costs associated, but, you know, they didn't get all the money or anything, but there are fees and there are costs and there's a profit margin there. And that's what you get to have a piece of as a payments representative, right?
Absolutely. And to that point, I think it's important to understand that getting with the right company, and you and I both know this, vital, because unfortunately, we've heard all the different war stories and the horror stories of, you know, how the people have lost their residual income.
Right.
And I'm grateful to say that with us, our residual income is ours for a lifetime and beyond. I have representatives that are making six-figure income. They've been doing it for, I'm talking monthly, 15 years. And they're like, Rich, I'm going around the world and traveling. I'm like, good for you. You earned that.
Right.
So it's not a situation where it's, oh, sorry, you didn't write three this month, so you're not getting that $80,000 this month. So
some
of them I don't hear from. They text me and email me, send me pictures. I'm like, great, man, fantastic.
Yeah.
Then even beyond, we all know that we leave this earth someday. That's happened on our team. They can pass that residual on to family or relatives or ministries.
Sure.
And that's a great thing to know. You don't hear that a lot, but I'm thankful that we have that.
Yeah. So, Rich, we're talking about residual, obviously, is fantastic. However, somebody who's coming into the industry, they're used to making a certain amount of money. They need money to live, right? So how do they survive the first 6 months or a year in this business? How does the upfront portion of that work?
Very important. That's great, great, great question there. So I tell everybody coming into the business, the first year will be most challenging for you because you're starting out from ground zero. You're learning the business. Your residual income at this point is zero. Your first check might be $25. Who knows? It might be higher than that.
Right.
So it's important to have a program where you can make upfront money while you're building that residual income. And that's to my point that we have representatives that make six figures their first year, and the majority of that is from the upfront money. Can I share with you what we're doing right now?
Okay. Let's do it.
So yeah, with our program, as we all know, and those coming into the business, we have three different programs. You have traditional processing. We have the reward pay program, which we know as surcharge program, and we have the consumer choice program. PayRock has stepped up their game. We had this great summit in January. They're giving $250 upfront for a traditional processing. For the choice programs, they're giving $500 upfront, but we all know that merchants need new equipment. So we can do very nice rental programs, or we can even do leasing programs if that applies to a particular merchant. So the leasing company is giving $150 just for signing people up, and then we make that commission on top of that. So representatives can write a couple of merchants per week, no big deal, you know, 2-3 merchants a week, no pressure, and make a couple $1,000s a week while they're building their residual income. And it's amazing. We're seeing representatives do that. They're writing up a merchant, it's installed in 3 days, bang, 500's in their bank account.
Right.
So it's exciting. Right. So yeah, that's a great point. It's important that while you're building your residual income, you make that upfront money, because people usually will say, man, I got to work a part-time job. I got to work at delivering pizzas at nighttime while I'm doing this until my residual's up. You don't have to do that. You know, focus on this. You'll make plenty of money up front and you'll make residual income.
Good stuff. So Rich, before we end this video, where should people go if they want to learn more about your team and join it up?
Call me directly, 904-434-4635. I'm in the beautiful state of Florida. Or you can email me at payrock, P-A-Y-R-O-C, richnorton@gmail.com. If I don't answer, text me, leave me a message. I look forward to speaking with you.
Awesome. Thanks, Rich.
This is the Insider's Report with Patty Murphy, brought to you by The Green Sheet. For nearly 40 years, The Green Sheet has been the go-to source for news, analysis, and educational tools that empower and connect payments professionals. If you're not reading The Green Sheet already, check it out on the web today at www.greensheet.com.
So, James, it looks like Capital One is getting some blowback on its planned acquisition of Discover Card Services. Not
really?
That that's a total surprise, but...
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Senator Elizabeth Warren and 12 members of the House have written the Fed and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, both of which must okay the merger, to express their, quote, deep concerns over the plans by two of the largest credit card issuers in the countries to combine. They wrote in a letter, this merger is bad for consumers. The banking and credit card industries are already highly concentrated. Today, the six largest bank holding companies control more assets than all the other bank holding companies combined. So consolidation in the banking sector causes higher prices, more fees, yada yada. We've heard all of the things, but it's interesting because the merger announcement, you know, came right after the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau issued a report revealing the impact of credit card industry consolidation on consumers. And that's where some of this data comes from. They say that large banks charge higher interest rates than do small credit card issuers, and quote, nearly half of the largest credit card issuers, including Capital One, offer cards with a maximum APR in excess of 30%.
Wow.
That blew my mind. CFPB, the consumer agency also found that large credit card issuers average fees that are 70% higher than those charged by credit unions and some of the smaller issuers. They also said that Capital One has a concerning history of mistreating consumers. Now, it had to reach back a little bit on this one, but in 2012, it was ordered to refund $140 million to 2 million consumers who had low credit scores and were misled into paying for add-on products. They were also hacked back in 2019 when 100 million credit card applications went missing. And the letter took a shot at the OCC specifically. Now, for people who don't know, and I know this only because my first job out of college was working for the OCC. And it's an agency of the Treasury Department that regulates the largest national banks, you know, like Citibank and Chase, Wells, B of A, all the really big ones. They want the OCC to put a moratorium on its fast tracking of applications. They say that they haven't, the OCC has not said no to a bank application in 3 years. And this includes the controversial purchase last year of First Republic and an FDIC fire sale, as we all know, when FTX, you know, sort of sunk Silicon Valley Bank. That was part of the ripple effect. And in a parting shot, the letter warned that the merger might be seen in a bad light given the Biden administration's focus on fighting concentration in banking and other sectors and, of course, junk fees. So, you know, it's a big acquisition. We were bound to hear some kind of squawking on a big acquisition. You always do.
Sure.
I don't see this as being a deal breaker, but I think it's their way of raising some issues about what they see as concentration in the issuing side of this business.
Wow. Really interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard about this, so I'll be interested to see how it goes. And yeah, these mergers always and acquisitions always tend to take a very, very long time to play out. So we'll see, see where it goes. But I'm with you. I'll be really surprised if it doesn't happen. But I think they wanted to get a little saber rattling, give themselves some leverage so that if things go the way that they don't want, then Senator Warren and others can reach out and say, hey, we warned about this.
We told you so. Yeah.
So good stuff, Patty. Thanks for the heads up.
Thank you for listening to the Merchant Sales Podcast. Whether you are an industry veteran, processing executive, or just trying to learn about the payment space, we appreciate your time. The Merchant Sales Podcast is a joint production of GreenSheet.com and CCSalesPro.com, and we hope you will tune in next week for more information and tips on building your merchant services business.